Hello and welcome to the Max Moo podcast. This is Lindsay Behrens. I'm the founder of Max Moo, a website that makes recommendations beyond Broadway in New York City. This is a special bonus episode of our Max Moo podcast. It's actually the first episode that Nicole and I ever recorded. We thought of it as an experiment, and I don't think either of us thought anyone would ever really listen to it. It's a little bit different than our other podcasts. It's all about one show. We dive really deep into the show Daniel Kitson performed at St. Anne's Warehouse last December, Analog. This isn't going to be an episode for everyone, but we hope you'll give it a chance, and we hope you'll check out our other episodes at maxmoo.com. Just click on podcasts. The reason we're releasing this episode is because Daniel Kitson has just opened a new version of Analog at the National Theatre in London, and we thought there might be some people who would be interested in having a conversation about the differences between the New York and the London version. So we're putting it out there, and we would love to hear what you think about it, and we'd love to hear if you saw both versions of the show, how they compare. If you're going to the London show and you don't want any fear of spoilers, you might want to wait to listen to this until after you've seen that show. Enjoy the episode. Okay, this is the test of the Max Moo podcast, and today we're going to talk about Daniel Kitson's latest show that just ended yesterday, called Analog at St. Anne's Warehouse. But let's get started with introductions. I'm Lindsay, and I am the founder of a website called Max Moo about New York City theater, and here with me is Nicole. Who are you, Nicole?
Hello, I am Nicole. I blog at Mildly Bitter's Musings and The Craptacular, and I'm on Twitter as Mildly Bitter.
Cool. So, Nicole, you are what I would call the foremost expert on Daniel Kitson. Would you agree?
I think that's an unfair characterization. Actually, someone recently asked if I was in, like, the top 10 of his fans, and I argued that I might be within the top 10, but I don't know that I'm really at the top. I feel like I'm a very new fan, so it's unfair to sort of, you know, claim preeminence.
Okay, but you're definitely a leader here in New York City on this topic.
Yes, okay. I think that's fair.
Okay, so let's, why don't you try to explain Kitson's latest show at St. Anne's?
Okay, well, I think it's important if you haven't seen him before to know he started in stand-up comedy and has moved into storytelling in the theater space. And this is a storytelling show. It's not one of his comedy shows because he continues to work in both spaces. And it's a storytelling show where the entire story is performed through previously recorded elements on tape. So he splits up the story into 23 different tape machines and plays them in order to present the story. And he is physically present installing each of the machines and there to fix them when they go wonky. Do you want me to talk about actually what's on
those tapes? This is totally filled with spoilers because he's not going to perform the show again, right?
Like
that's
right.
That's the end. So there's no fear of spoiling anyone. If you haven't seen it, you're not going to get to.
It's true. Well, and he's taking this show, Analog, to London in February at the National Theatre there. But he's already disclosed that he won't be taking the same tapes, the same story. The story that we heard in New York will only be the story heard in New York. There'll be a completely different recorded story for London, but the same structure, I guess, will apply. So the story that was told in New York involves sort of two characters which we come to discover are connected in some way, but the unfolding of that has provided a lot of offline fodder and discussion, because most people when they first see the show maybe don't quite understand what's happening. So there's the story of Martin, Thomas Martin Taplow, who is an 80-year-old man who's been forced by his wife to sit in his garage and record his story of his whole life. Everything. She's told him to record everything. And then we have this separate story of told in reverse chronological order about this woman named Trudy, who listens to what it turns out to be one of Thomas's recordings and becomes obsessed with it and sort of spends her life in service to trying to find Thomas, sort of chasing the story that she hears on this tape. And I guess the big spoiler is that Trudy is Thomas's wife, and so this is a time travel story.
Okay, that's a subject to some debate, so let's not just conclude that that's the meaning of the story.
That's a potential interpretation of this show.
Okay, did you like this show?
This is a very controversial subject. I have grown fond of it after seeing it six times, but it is definitely not one of my favorite Daniel Kitson shows. I really struggled with this show more than any of his other work.
Why?
At first, I thought it was because it was recorded. I thought, you know, there's definitely, if you've seen him perform live, to hear him tell a story in a recorded medium versus in a live medium, he does a lot of improvisational moments. He reacts a lot to sort of audience noise and reactions and things like that. So there's a whole added frisson of excitement when he's telling a live story and things go a bit awry and he goes off in a new place. And so if you've seen one of his shows, to see it a second time, it may not be the exact identical show. He doesn't write scripts. He doesn't publish scripts, so it is a very free form, much more again in sort of the storytelling tradition than a play or sort of structured monologue. So I think I suffered this great loss initially when I saw it, feeling like, oh, we're missing out on all the good stuff that he does, having it being recorded. But I think ultimately, after I saw it three times before reviewing it, it wasn't so much the recording as much as I didn't completely buy the structure. I didn't completely understand why he needed the tape, why he needed to break it into 23 different machines. I didn't really understand the physical quality of him creating this whole space. And I still don't, frankly.
So your view of the show didn't change much from after your review. Are there things you would change about your review? Because your review, I revisited recently. And it is quite lukewarm, I would say. Like, it's not very positive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would change it. It's definitely how I felt after seeing it three times. After seeing it six times, I do have the warmth that I have for it is still kind of the same warmth. It's only grown. I love the way in which he tells love stories. I mean, he finds these qualities to relationships, the story between Thomas and his wife, Gertie, this love that they have is told just in such beautiful, unique detail. And there's nothing, I mean, I absolutely love it. I loved it when I first heard it, but I spent a lot of time wondering about this Trudy story and feeling the Trudy story was very cold and a little boring, and I couldn't quite fit the pieces of it together. And then, you know, I was like, well, maybe it's as contrast to this lovely, wonderful love story. Here's this solitary woman sitting in her room listening to recording over and over again. That's the depressing side of this. And now that I have another interpretation of the story and the connection between Trudy and Gertie, it changes that a little, but I still think it's not one of his strongest stories.
Yeah. I felt similarly after the first time, having seen him before, that we were missing the best part of a Kitson show, which is Kitson. But then after seeing it, you know, I only saw it four times. And now this sort of having this, this conversation about the meaning of the show, or not the meaning, because I think there are two things, right? There's what is the story and unraveling that mystery. And then if you can figure out, if there is one answer, then what does the show mean? Like, what's the takeaway? What's the moral of the story? Which I think is a phrase that Kitson would probably object to. But, like, you know, what is the meaning that you as a viewer take away from it?
Right.
And to me, if it gets into this time travel thing, it loses so much meaning. So
for you.
Yes.
Okay.
So let's describe sort of the potential. Well, why don't you just go to describe the time travel thing? Like, what does that mean?
Right. I mean, and this is, again, one interpretation. I think it's important to say that I remember when I was in film school, one of my teachers sort of saying, you know, you'd put up your film in front of the audience of your fellow classmates who are horrible, and they would tear it apart. That was the horrible part. And, you know, it was her idea was your intent, whatever it is as an artist, as a filmmaker, becomes completely different when seen through other people's eyes. And so I do think, you know, whatever Kitson's intent is, there can be many different interpretations of the story. But the time travel theory, which was presented to me by other people, which I now sort of see how all the pieces of the story fit together into that one nicely, essentially involves the idea that Trudy, as she's introduced, has disappeared, and that disappearance is her being sent back in time to become Gertie, Thomas's wife. It's this, she has spent the sort of contemporary time in the story that we've heard, going up to strange men saying hello in an attempt to find the voice of this man she's heard on this recording, and the introduction when Thomas meets his wife, who he nicknames Gertie, in the past, essentially somewhere in the 1930s, is, you know, he meets this woman on a park bench who just says hello and says, oh, I go up to strange men and say hello. And so he then falls in love with this crazy woman who's sort of out of time. She is well before time. She swears a lot. She, you know, has traveled the world. She's seen all these things, and he finds her fascinating because of her uniqueness. And then she makes him, after his 80th birthday, she's been basically spending his entire life trying to get him to record his voice. And I assume for time travel purposes, though my knowledge pretty much comes from Back to the Future, terrible things will happen if you don't, you know, if you somehow play with the past. And so I think she needs him to record his voice on the tapes so that she can then in the future come back to the past. I don't know. I don't know how these things work. I'm not a sci-fi person.
This is what I call the Doctor Who theory of analog. And I do believe that is a hijacking by rabid Doctor Who fans. You know who you are out there. But so the logistics of time travel aside, if it just becomes a story about a woman who is born in the 1970s, when she's 8 years old, hears Thomas Taplow's voice on a recording, and then proceeds to live a very a life singularly devoted to tracking down the man whose voice she hears on this tape.
Yes.
So she approaches random men who seem to fit what she thinks is their age range and talks to them. She haunts junk shops and listens to found tapes, and she takes a job at a call center and answers the phone hundreds of times a day, multiple thousand times in a week is how it's described in the show. And then,
in an attempt to
identify this person.
Man, find this man somewhere, somehow.
And then at some point, she decides, and I don't think this is really explained, but she proceeds to erase the tape. Yes. And try to record her own message to the future.
Which I have always had a theory about that. Like, I thought before somebody presented this time travel theory with Trudy, I thought the idea of her recording it, that us hearing the recording of her on tape essentially released her, sent her. That's what caused her disappearance. That's what gave her escape from this life she has created. And I think there's another thing underlying this, you know, what sounds like a very kind of terrible, limited life, is that her mother dies young. Her father dies when she's very young.
How young?
Well, her mother died at 38, which is young, I think, for most people.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And her father's died when she was very young. Yeah. And her father was this junk collector. And so there's some, I always felt like before the time travel theory sort of came into play and got in the way, this idea of this person who has been sort of chasing the past for good reason.
Mm-hmm. So then she proceeds to try to record something on the tape, and she tries thousands of times. At some point, there's a number given,
it's like
7,000, yeah, more than 7,000. And then in 2012, she disappears, sans explanation. She's just not there anymore. And that's actually the first of the Trudy story that you hear, because her story is told in reverse chronological order.
Right.
And then the idea is that she goes back to the 1930s and she meets Thomas, and then that's where the Thomas Gertie story starts.
Right.
And it goes all the way up to 1977 when Thomas is making the recordings, and then when he exits the garage, he calls for Gertie and he can't find her. She's gone.
Presumably dead.
Because Trudy's been born, apparently. Right. I guess that's the way it works. I don't really know. We need one of these Doctor Who experts to explain this to us. But anyway, so, you know, the thing that really bothers me about the time travel theory is that the whole show, well, not the whole show, but there are many themes in the show, one of which is like coincidence and synchronicity and like just how sometimes things just happen that you can't explain, that seem beyond, that defy explanation.
Well, and he calls it possibility and impossibility.
Yes, yes. And the tape that I've come to think of as kind of the crux of the whole presentation is when Trudy is, I don't know, I think she's in her teens. She's already discovered the tape, and she's sitting in the basement listening to it because she hides it there. Oh, you're making a face that you don't like this tape. And for some reason, and I don't really understand it, but she's in a space with no windows.
She's in the basement.
Yeah, in the basement. But she sees sunlight being reflected onto the wall, and she's just amazed by this, and she runs up the stairs, and she sees, I guess, how the sun is reflected off, like, multiple surfaces into this space with no windows. So she's getting sunlight in a space with no windows. And it's just that all these things happen to align at this moment to cause this unexpected, impossible thing to happen. And that's, it ties to the very first tape that Kitson uses, where he talks about, like, if I can make this all happen just perfectly, we will get the story. And if not, it seems unlikely, right? Like, that he tries to paint it as towards the impossible side of the spectrum, although he's then performed it every night continuously.
Right. Although when we saw it the first night, it was definitely much closer to the impossible than the possible. There was a lot of technical breakdown. There was a lot of sweating involved.
Yeah. So so to me, if time travel answers the story, if that is the story, then, like, to me, the whole message of the show becomes, like, the impossible is possible, including time travel. And, like, that's just the meaning. It just makes no sense to me at all. Stupid story.
It limits the beauty. It limits the, what exactly are you reacting to? Like, what part of that do you not find? I mean, I guess also you're not a Doctor Who fan.
I mean,
let the truth come out.
Well, I've tried to watch Doctor Who, but never really successfully done so. But
I mean, I was a Quantum Leap fan. Does that count?
Yes, I was also a Quantum Leap fan. So okay, so
we're now dating ourselves on this podcast.
We have some entry point to the world of time travel, and I definitely saw all three Back to the Futures.
Okay, I've only seen the first Back to the Future.
Okay, that's limiting, but
see if you can work with me here. That photo when the siblings are disappear in that scary Back to the Future photo, that's terrifying when you're little.
Yes, it is indeed. But okay, like, there are things that are possible that you don't think are possible, like humans flying in planes and, you know, humans running faster today than they did 50 years ago. Like, I'm sure 50 years ago people didn't think you could run 100-yard dash in under 10 seconds.
Well, but even today, the concept of radio was impossible to some people at some point in time. And here we sit today with microphones and a computer and wireless things. And
right.
My grandfather, I remember in his later years, would just sort of like look at me with my BlackBerry and be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I am contacting the world through this tiny device in my hand.
Yes.
And, you know, the cross-eyed look he'd give me would, you know, suggest a certain level of impossibility in his mind.
And so are we meant to believe, A, that time travel fits into that spectrum, and B, the thing that I think bugs me more than anything else, is the idea that, like, if Trudy wanted to travel back in time and, like, spent her story trying to build a time machine and then succeeded, then I'd be like, okay, I get it. But she didn't. She didn't do anything related to traveling back in time. Like, that's the thing I don't understand. There's this huge disconnect between, like, her efforts and the results of her efforts.
Well, yeah, I mean, he spends some time on the tape, Thomas does, talking about trying and the concept that you have to just keep trying. And maybe the only thing that stops things from becoming possible, the bridging the gap between the impossible and possible, is merely in trying. So, yes, and her method of trying seems very grounded, very quotidian. It's not a grand dream like you're talking about, of building a spaceship or studying physics, for Christ's sake. I mean, anything, Trudy, if you really cared that much.
An ad in the paper, may we suggest?
I mean, I think, but
asking your mother, whose voice is this on the tape?
Hey, now destroy that magical realism with your sarcasm. I think, though, that I don't know that that was her goal. I don't even know if that's what she knew she was trying to do.
Yeah, no, I don't think she did, right.
And so it does beg the question, what did Trudy want? And I think I spent so much time listening to this story and focusing on Gertie and Thomas and the life that they led that, and I, you know, and the reason why I sort of found the Trudy story a little boring was that she didn't seem like an interesting character to me. So, and you know, to some degree, I blame Kitson for making her story, just making her this. And, you know, to your point, that moment in the basement where she has this magical moment where she suddenly conceives of the impossible becoming possible, I thought that was one of the most, like, uninteresting demonstrations of that concept, considering having heard many of Kitson's stories before. And, you know, it just didn't feel as beautiful and as special and as magical as other things he's written have felt. And so when you brought up that tape and I made the squinchy voice with my squinchy face with my face, I mean, that's why, because I know that is key. It is absolutely critical to her journey. And I didn't feel that. And right. It makes me so sad. And that's why my review is so sad, because I wanted to feel like I mean, let's face it, like, he writes about characters who are disconnected, who are alone. I mean, he spends, you know, time immemorial talking about loneliness. And so he's created this very lonely, solitary character who, you know, I think we all should be able to connect to in moments of sadness. You've, you know, lost a parent, you've, you know, lost touch with the direction of your life, all of these things that should be connectable. And then I didn't feel connected to her. And that's, I think, one of the tragedies for me of Analogues, that I didn't feel as connected to the characters as I have to some of his other characters in the past.
I totally agree. And I think that the part of the problem I have with the Trudy story is the disconnect between the problem she is having and the ultimate solution. And I don't really feel like she's taking steps to resolve her problem. And yet her problem gets solved.
So you're blaming her for not doing enough therapy. Is that?
That's exactly right. She's clearly suffering from mental illness. She needs to be.
And she got out of it without having to go see a therapist. Yeah. It's totally not fair.
Magic.
Right.
That's just it. The moral of the story is just hope for magic. Dive into your mental illness. Relish in it. Don't take any steps to get better. And magic will happen.
Yes. Okay. I see your resistance, but we need to talk about that. We need to take a moment.
Okay. But here's my other point. Is what you said. You said this exactly, which is that Trudy is a character who is sad and plain, and yet Gertie and Thomas have this beautiful relationship, and he adores her, and she is vibrant and full of life. And I don't buy for a second that Trudy traveling through time transformed her into this vibrant person. She just wasn't.
But you don't think that if you personally experienced the impossible, if this dream of yours, this like fixated thing that you've held on to since childhood, this
finding a man.
I don't think that that's necessarily, I mean, maybe, certainly, like, the focus of what she's doing is trying to find a man, but she's not trying to find him, we don't know what purpose, and certainly all we know about her is that she doesn't have a father in her life. Okay, so this is just some creepy story about trying to find that father figure you want to sleep with? Is that really?
Well, the other thing that I think is really kind of, I don't know, I'm going to say, like, cheap about the story is, like, her name is said on that tape. There's a certain narcissism to it. Thomas says, this amazing, beautiful, wonderful
person. He calls her a miracle. Yeah, she's a miracle.
I love is Gertrude Amelia Livingston. And she's like, that's my name. I could be that to that person. So I just need to find that person and then everything will be great with my life. And then that happens and everything is great with her life. Like, that's not a solution to a problem.
I see where you're going with that idea and that through line, but I guess I challenge the idea that I don't know that that's what Trudy, when she was 8 years old and first listened to the tape and heard that. I mean, granted, you know, 8-year-old girls can fixate on, you know, various things. Corey Haim, for instance, I don't know, some people. I think that, you know, I don't think she built her entire life. Like, the time to which after her mother has died and she listens to the tape to give her, like, the get up and go. Like, this is the only person in her life who stayed with her. It's the only person she has in her life, which is A, sad, and B, apparently there's a guy, Nigel, at her office who needs, like, paperclips. She could talk to Nigel,
well,
but she doesn't.
You know? She doesn't have any relationships. Anyway, what is it, meaning-wise, theme-wise, that you take away from this story?
Dead air. I guess that's been the frustrating experience of it, because I spent a lot of time frustrated with the concept, because he keeps talking about fragments and the fragments of the bits of the story that then line up in perfect, you know, alignment to tell you this story. And last night when I was listening to the last show, he talked, I heard, because, I mean, the tapes, I mean, for the record, I don't know, sorry, for the record, historic record here of no one listening to this podcast ever. He changed the tapes over time. Like, there were slight differences between the shows. So, you know, for going back to that bit about, you know, Kitson and his unusual moments of improvisation, these tapes were not fixed from day one to the last day, although they did start to become fixed at some point. But I heard different things each time. And that's certainly, I think, an experience with a Kitson show. I mean, he is rapid fire delivery, and you get about, you know, if you're lucky, a third of the information flying at you. And last night, for some reason, I heard scattering more than I heard fragments. And I thought, oh, like, our stories are scattered in other people's lives, that they are the sort of the dust in the wind kind of idea. And so, and at the end of Thomas's life, these machines will be scattered. And rather than fragments, for some reason, that linguistic distinction worked a lot better for me in terms of the idea of sending this out into the universe, sending all of this, all of these bits out there, and that this scattered piece, this, you know, fleck of dust just lands at Trudy's feet, and it becomes the strand she traces back. It's the piece that she follows. And I guess I think with this story, it's talking about, you know, finding value in that past, finding those connections, making that, you know, is there something the past can give us? Because Thomas, you know, says the past is better back here. And he's sort of saying it flippantly and yet sincerely, because for him, that, like, his past, his time with Gertie is perfect and beautiful. And, you know, it doesn't sound like he's really sort of racking up any complaints at that point for 40 years with this woman that he loves. So maybe there is value to all of us in connecting to the past, maybe not obsessing with it, maybe not spending all your day and your entire life listening to a recording of an old man in your house. But I think there is some value to say that, like, let's not just toss away the entire past, making those connections to the past have value.
We've talked about this for almost 30 minutes.
Okay.
This is pretty interesting. I feel like we could talk about it for another 30.
I feel like it's probably only interesting to people who've actually seen the show.
Yeah, well.
And then even then, they might be like, no, I was good with not understanding. It's fine.
It's interesting because, you know, I actually feel like there could be a massive debate. Were the right people gathered in a space, not necessarily in person, but online or whatever, in a single location? Because I do think that the people who believe in the time travel theory, there's a lot of logic to it. Like, having seen the show after understanding that theory, I was like, all the pieces fit. Like, all the pieces are there, and there's a lot of logic to that theory. But I think that there's also a contingency of people who would find that idea repulsive and would push back on it vehemently, and that it could be a really interesting debate. But those people are few and scattered widely, so that's unlikely to happen.
Thank you so much for joining us on this bonus episode of the Maximu podcast. We would love to hear from you about this show. You can find us on Twitter at Maximu, M-A-X-A-M-O-O. Nicole is at Mildly Bitter. That's M-I-L-D-L-Y-B-I-T-T-E-R. And I'm at Lindsay Behrens, L-I-N-D-S-A-Y-B-A-R-E-N-Z. See you next week.